Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to talk about progress. How to make progress? Are we making progress? What's the best way to make progress? To help in this discussion is a woman who I have always been amazed at, her perceptions, her wisdom. She's actually previously had a radio show on this station, and she teaches something called genetic resonance. And we'll learn more about that when we speak to our guest, Roberta Maria Addy. Roberta, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you again.
I'm so glad that we can talk and delve into some of these deeper understandings that I know that you have information for us about. I want to start off with something that I heard you talk about recently at a workshop that you were giving in genetic resonance. And I was really excited about what you presented because it had to do with moving beyond forgiveness. So many of us think that forgiveness is the answer. If we can only forgive better, we can have a more peaceful planet. You disagreed with that, and I want to hear more about it.
I don't want to put down the value of forgiveness and the efforts that people are making to forgive. All of that is commendable because at least there is an intention to make things better. So I don't want to put it down, and I would encourage people to continue to practice forgiveness as a way of resolving the conflict that they experience. But we can go way beyond forgiveness in terms of the efficacy of our efforts to be at peace with ourselves and one another. And I'm going to explain what I mean by that. Forgiveness presumes that there is a right and a wrong, that someone has, let's say someone has wronged me in some way, and so I have a choice, either to choose vengeance or hatred and resentment for the rest of my life, or forgiveness, which means if I go the way of forgiveness, internally, I have to put myself in a superior position in relation to the other. I have to think of the other as a wrongdoer and as myself as a righteous human being who is willing to be bigger than wrongdoing, and therefore there's still a separation with the other person.
Although that would be the basic fundamental way of forgiveness, but I always think of forgiveness as forgiving the other person at a level of the limitations of humanity, that human beings can only do so much, and we're all vulnerable to our limitations.
In general terms, that works, Peter, and I agree with you, but when it comes down to individual experiences, when someone has really, really, really hurt us, have you seen people really being able to forgive and stay in the forgiveness? I haven't. What I've in the work I've done with people, what I've seen is that people keep having to forgive because they get to the point where they're willing to forgive, and then they go on their way, and then later on, they experience the same resentment coming up again, and there they go having to forgive again.
Right, I understand that, but there are also some very sophisticated forgiveness skills that are being taught. I did a radio show not long ago for a book called Unconditional Forgiveness, mm-hmm. and it really created a transformation in people to work with skills that allow one to transcend the problem.
And, so maybe that's what I'm talking about.
Right, but we can try to do that, but trying doesn't always do enough.
That's what I've observed in my work and in myself, because I myself apply the same things that I teach. If they don't work for me, I don't teach them to other people. And I have applied the unconditional forgiveness in my life. And what I notice is that with all good intentions and with the greatest effort I can put into it, I can exercise forgiveness all I want, but there's something that triggers the negative emotions eventually. There's a button that gets pushed, and there I go again feeling resentful towards that person, even though my mind at the same time is saying, no, remember, you've forgiven that person. And yet the feeling is still there. So what I've learned, and I have to say that I've learned this, the first time I heard this was from Bert Hellinger, the person who brought family constellations to the West. I believe that the work I do, genetic resonance, is an offshoot of constellations, and I believe that his work is an offshoot of tribal healing, tribal medicine that he learned from the Zulu. But besides that, I heard Bert Hellinger say forgiveness doesn't work because it still separates us from the other person. There is a wrongdoer and a person who is willing to forgive that wrongdoing. There is a way to go beyond that, which connects us to actually the latest information we get from quantum physics that tells us that we're not in separate individuals. We're just one being, and each one of us is one drop of consciousness, and there is no time or space. Those two things are an illusion. And so basically what happened in the past, looked at from the perspective of metaphysical tradition, from spiritual perspective, and as well as from physics, from the quantum physics revelations, what the past is nothing but a dream, as Shakespeare said long time ago. What happened only in our mind. And it happened as an experience that, if we want to look at it as a learning experience, that's fine. But it happened to teach us something about us. It wasn't meant for us to be an experience where we would then separate ourselves from the other person and go through all these emotions. No, it was whenever we experience hurt, someone hurts us. What I believe is most effective in the way of maintaining inner peace is to realize that that person is just mirroring an aspect of ourselves that we have not yet come to terms with, and to the point where we're not able to see it in ourselves. Now, when I say this, usually the question is, how can you, when you look at a serial killer, and you obviously feel repulsed and horrified, and yet you see that this person exists and they do what they do, how can there be a mirroring of that in me? Well, it takes a lot of courage to go into the unconscious like Jung did and really explore the horrors, the archetypes, the horrifying archetypes that are lurking in each of us. I mean, we come from a history of bloody, cruel behavior for hundreds of thousands of years, Peter, and that resonates in our DNA.
Actually, let me give you an experience that I had one time when a client came in who had cerebral palsy. Intuitively, I went to look for the source of his cerebral palsy, and I said, oh, I see it in a great-grandfather of yours who was a mass killer.
Uh-huh.
And you were born with his DNA.
Yep.
And so you're carrying this karma of this mass killer, and so you've chosen to live this life with cerebral palsy because of that. And
now
let me just say that, you know, that's just me talking from my intuition. And then his response to it was, oh yes, that ancestor of mine was famous for all the killing that he did. And I've been told many times in this life that I'm here to stop the killing. So he understood that.
You know, the Native Americans have a saying that I agree with, that our actions have repercussions seven generations down the line. The only thing I disagree with is that I think is a lot more than seven generations. I think it's actually forever, that what our ancestors did continues to resonate in our DNA until we face it. And what I find in my own experience with my work is that if I tell someone, well, you know, what I can see here is that there's an ancestor who killed a lot of people, let's say, in World War II. Sometimes people have a very negative rejection to being told such a thing. They reject the idea of belonging to a family where there could have been such a monster. And yet, well, only 450,000 years ago, we all 7 billions of us had the same two parents. So we're all brothers and sisters, literally, not as a figure of speech. And we all have genetic resonance with everything that all these people have done throughout this 500,000 years. And Peter, especially the last century, the 21st century, the 20th century, the last two centuries, have been the most devastating and the most gruesome in terms of the killings, the genocides, because the weapons have gotten more sophisticated and powerful. You know, there's been a lot of killing. All families have killers, suicides, rapists, people that have done horrible things. Everyone does. When I work with people, my work, what I do to try to help them come to terms with this is to explain to them that they're not the only ones who have ancestors that did these things. We all do. And yet, these were human beings, like we are, who were in a situation where they had to make a choice. And according to what their circumstances were and the conditioning that they had received and whatever it was, they made a choice that from our perspective today was horrible. And, you know, we cannot imagine making that choice. And yet we have to come to terms with the fact that they were human beings doing the best they could. That levels us. It puts us all at the same level. In genetic resonance, when I do a constellation where there is, let's say, someone whose ancestor has been murdered by, let's say, a Nazi, a successful outcome of that is when all parties involved can find a way to be at peace with one another and with what they did, accepting that the human experience involves this type of horror, that it doesn't help continuing to resonate with it, with fear and hatred and self-doubt and all that. What helps is to disregard the past as just a dream, a collective dream of the collective unconscious that can be healed. But it cannot be healed forcibly. And what I mean by that is we cannot impose on another person the willingness to do this. They have to arrive at the point where they are so desirous of inner peace that they ask for the information on how to do it, how to reach it. And then we can help them.
Now, this is the point that I wanted to bring out, too, is going beyond forgiveness is what you're talking about. You're talking about coming to a place where we just want to be at peace and everybody hold hands together and love each other. We can't always do that, of course, because the people we want to do that with might be carrying a knife. So we want to be, you know, we have survival mechanisms going within us that create fear.
If we are experiencing that sort of thing, we're faced with someone who's not willing to come to terms with us or to be at peace. The way to interpret it is not to make the other wrong, and I know how difficult this is, but this is really what the major teachers of humanity have said throughout the centuries. It's to understand that the other is mirroring something that is not yet finished in us, and to allow the other to be who he is and to heal in his own way and when he's ready or she, without imposing. Thich Nhat Hanh said, if I find anger in me, I cannot mistreat it. I have to treat it with the utmost care and tenderness and love. Otherwise, it will increase and fester. The only way to deal with violence and hurtful behavior is to understand that it reflects something about us, let alone the other. The other is who he is. It doesn't matter. What matters is, what is it about me that still keeps me in this reality where I'm surrounded by this violence? And what it is that I need to change in myself in order to change my environment?
That's so important, and it's so hard to grasp that. That when we're living in a world of violence, there's something still in our own consciousness that hasn't been resolved.
And yet that was all of Jung's work. When you look at it, the essence of it amounts to that point, that we cannot judge we cannot afford to point the finger at other people anymore. It doesn't work anymore. We must go inside and find the monster within and come face to face with it. Do you know the story of the Tibetan nun? Labdrum was her name, where she was told by the abbess of the monastery that she shouldn't go out that day because there was a huge demon outside the monastery that would have eaten her up, because that was what the demon did. Everyone who came through his path, he would just devour. And so this nun, instead of being afraid of it, she said, well, fine, if that poor thing is so hungry that he needs to eat me up in order to be satisfied for a moment, let him do that. And she walked out and faced the demon and said, you know, I feel so sorry for you that you're in such pain that you need to do this, that if it gives you a moment of satisfaction to devour my body, then do so. And the demon was so impressed with the courage and the compassion of this woman that instead of devouring her, he became her servant, and he became her helper and her ally. And this nun funded the oldest school of Tibetan nuns. It's still going on, where the whole center of the teachings is, do not face the demon with fear and doubt. Allow the demon to be who he is, and just evoke compassion in yourself for that being who must be suffering, who must be living in hell in order to behave that way. And once you get to that level of compassion, that demon's energy is neutralized, because you've found good and bad. There is no longer any judgment or the need to make one good and the other one bad.
This is such a beautiful story.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And it really, I mean, you can read up on it. You do a search on the internet, you can read the whole story, and there's a picture of her and everything. This really did happen.
There's another story that I heard recently about something that took place in Rwanda. And remember that there were two tribes there, and one tribe totally brutalized and tried to destroy the other. And they did it through very ugly murders. This one man had lost his entire family, and he had nothing left. And this is after it was all peace. There were trials. There were all kinds of things going on to try to reclaim a civilization. And this man had nobody. And he looked at these people from the other tribe. And he went over to this one man in the other tribe. And he said, I don't have anybody left in my tribe around me to care about. Would you please be my brother?
Wow. Wow, isn't that gorgeous?
And that's really what you're talking about.
And how simple it is, huh? It is really simple. We think it's so difficult, but it isn't. All it takes is a shift of perspective. Like, I'm not separate from that person. We are one humanity. We are one body. We are cells of one unique being. So what choice, what alternative do we have? Either we go on the way we have been doing and it escalates, or we take the past for what it is, which is something that didn't really happen. I know this sounds crazy, but science tells us that our perception of things is but an illusion. So what really did happen? It happened in our mind. There were horrible wars and genocides in our mind.
Well, this is like quantum physics, where the atoms, the electrons, don't exist until they're observed by us.
Exactly. So we created that nightmare, and now we believe in it as if it were the reality upon which to base our choices in the present. If we do that, we're lost. We continue the massacres, and, you know, we continue along the same path that we've been going on. But if we start to get, and I think this man from the tribe that you just described, I mean, I don't know what kind of education he must have had. I don't know where he went to school. I don't know who was his teacher. But let's say he was, just hypothesizing, a simple person who lived in a tribe and had a family and lost everything through a horrible war, let's say, tribal conflict. Who taught him? How did he know to make that move that would bring that healing, not just to himself, but to humanity? Because whenever a person arrives at that level of compassion, it affects the collective unconscious. It's not just that person. We're all connected.
Well, so I think this is what's important.
Gesture like that can heal millions of people.
Right, and that's really what the future is about, because we can't have teachers out there trying to teach everybody, because there's too much resistance to teaching.
And it doesn't work, because there's too much teaching at this point. There's too much imposition of being good, being holy, being purified.
Talks of love, we should love each other.
So much expectation that we should be perfect. And I think that's very counterproductive.
What really works, and what you've talked about, is having direct experience of it.
Finding a way to our own heart and following what the heart says, because we're so used to listening to the intellect, to the reasoning mind, and the reasoning mind is the judge. And the judge, at the human level, says this is right and this is wrong.
Yeah.
And at that level, the judge is right.
The judge is our ego.
We can't argue with the fact that killing a child with the machete is wrong. It is wrong. It is a crime. But if we stay at that level, we'll be stuck at that level. There is a higher level that we can reach, and I believe we're in the process of reaching it collectively.
And maybe the internet is really a help in having these stories get around and having a lot more direct experience in humanity rather than, in the larger population of humanity. We're exposed to so much more. So we have the opportunity to actually witness more of what's going on in the world and make better choices.
Well, but again, the internet is a great gift. And like all great gifts in the third dimension, it has a shadow. So I think it really depends how one uses the internet. And it comes from self-awareness. A self-aware individual will use the internet in a certain way, as you described, to seek the way to inner peace. It has to come from the person's intention to use the internet that way, because there's also a lot of sharks on the internet who are out
right.
And get us in trouble. So in the third dimension, everything has a front and a back. Everything has a good side and a shadow side. And what Jung taught us was that rather than to be afraid of this shadow side, we just allow it to be, and we give it the freedom to be, and we don't give it the power to create fear and doubt in ourselves. And we just go on our way, the way of the heart, the way of compassion. In my experience, compassion is the universal medicine that His Holiness the Dalai Lama telling us about. How does one develop compassion? I think that is really a question that we might want to address, Peter.
Well, I think we are evolving every day. This planet feels like it's speeding up. We're actually becoming more conscious. For many of us in this world, we see a lot more consciousness. And so I'm expecting this to grow tremendously soon, actually, that we will have more and more people waking up and understanding these truths that we're talking about.
I agree with you, but awareness is not necessarily equated with compassion or enlightenment.
Well, we have more and more experiences.
I think people can be aware and use their awareness to exploit others. So it depends on the intention of the person. And I keep insisting that it isn't the outer world that we need to focus on, but the inner one.
Now,
that's what the conflict really is, inside.
Right, and we're working towards that, and we've talked about a lot of things that seem to be higher minded, and can help a lot of people.
Definitely.
So we're really at the end of the show, Roberta Maria Atti, ATTI. How can people reach you?
Well, I'm going to give an email because I'm going back to Europe. That's going to be the only way to reach me. Should I tell it?
Sure, please.
All right. B as in boy, E, double L as in love, A, C as in cat, U, A, and then the number is 22, so that's Belacqua 22. Which means beautiful water at gmail.com. So BELLACQUA 22.
So Roberta Maria Atti, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
It's
so great to talk with you.
Very nice talking with you too, and thank you for giving me this chance to be on your show.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. Or 212-222-7748. And thank you so much for listening.